Hey, everybody. Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
Well, welcome back, Terry.
For those of you who don't know, Terry was in Arizona living the good life.
Oh, man.
He's come back looking like burnt toast. Just love it. That son loves you, Terry.
I tried to get out there as much as possible,
man. Of course you did. We have been living in a cloud over here in British Columbia. It has just not stopped being cold and wet.
Yeah.
And apparently the weatherman said, prepare for another 2 weeks of it. So I'm losing my mind. I look at you.
Snow in the prairie still.
And I'm reminded that there is sun out there. Yeah, you have seen
there's some good sun in Phoenix.
It's good to have you back, Terry.
Good to be back.
Yeah, maybe I should move to Arizona instead.
Well, I would suggest that over Spruce Grove.
Yeah, I don't know if we've mentioned this actually, but for those who do not know, Steve Kim is moving to Edmonton.
Yeah.
Well, I got a picture from somebody yesterday, downtown Edmonton, and there's no snow at all. So, but that could change like today.
Like a minute ago. But for those of you who are wondering, Steve is still going to be with us working out there in Edmonton. If you are from the Edmonton area and you want to connect up with Steve.
Yeah,
I'd his love address to. Is.
Yeah, well, so if you're wondering what's going on here, my wife and I, we kind of discussed this just before Christmas. We've been talking about this for a while, but we basically came to the conclusion that it's best for the health of our family, especially for the kids, to be close to family. My wife's side of the family is all from that area, and so that's where we're going. We managed to find a place right across the street from my brother-in-law and his family.
So they bought a house.
Nice little place.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah. We're pretty excited about that. Really looking forward to being close to family. And also because Sharina will be finishing up her schooling. She's got another couple of years left and she'll be doing placements all over BC. So we thought we really needed to be close to family. So that's what's happening. But like Andy said, I'm going to continue working with Apologetics Canada. Come and say hello if you're in the Edmonton area.
We will miss his presence here, but you shouldn't miss him too much from the podcast. We're going to be trying to continue the three of us podcasting even with him in Edmonton.
It's just going
to
be you and me staring at each other.
It will be. that'll be probably one of the biggest changes that will be coming within the next week or two is that our very own Terry Crosby will be hosting.
What?
The Apologetics Canada.
Haven't we told you?
Terry, have you been digging around in the internet?
It seems like it's been a long time since I've dug something up. This is, I want to test your vocabulary. Do you speak Gen Z? Mm. So Gen Z is the people that have been born from 1999 to 2015. Mm. So do you know their definitions for these words? Do you know what lit means?
Yeah, yes. Come on, buddy.
You know that one?
Oh, yeah. And if you've watched if you've watched The Suits TV show, you know that there's a whole nother lit.
It means awesome or super fun.
Yeah.
That one's easy. How about fam? That's very easy.
Yeah, come on.
What about TBH?
To be honest.
There we go. Yes.
I wasn't on that one.
Did you get that one?
No.
Yes. Yeah. That's one too.
Oh, I thought you were just.
I'm
this
doing
is a new
the
Terry
lingo,
thing.
Man. I'm
no,
doing
I,
the lingo.
No, I didn't. I didn't know about that one. Clearly, I didn't know that one.
It's a real. It's to approve excitement or something along that line. Like you are. Yes, you got it. Okay. I saw this on your Facebook or not your Facebook, your Instagram the other day, Andy. Hashtag OOTD.
Yeah, this was not on my Instagram.
Outfit of the day.
All right.
Nope.
How about bougie?
Are you saying that right?
I think so.
How is it even spelled?
B-O-U-G-I-E, but it's with a oo.
Okay.
Bougie.
Got Barry White in the studio today.
Extravagant, classy, high collar.
Okay.
What about salty?
Oh, yeah, salty.
You know salty?
Yeah.
How would you use it in a sentence?
Boy, this candy is really salty.
Close, but... means frustrated and upset.
Oh, wow. Now we're getting into uncharted territories.
Yeah. GOAT.
As in G-O-A-T?
Abbreviation, yep. All caps.
GOAT.
I'm out. I'm clearly not.
Greatest of all time.
Interesting.
There's a whole new lingo, man, that we need to catch up on.
Wow, that makes me feel old.
Not sure I need to catch up on it.
No? Well, you got one or so out of all of them.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah.
How'd you do when you did that test, Terry?
I didn't know the OOTD, all the, like the lettered ones, G-O-A-T, I didn't know.
All right. Well, let's move on to the topic for today. And this one's kind of, shall we say, near and dear to our heart, I guess, just the way our organization, the kinds of topics that we talk about, this one really is important to us, and we talk about this often, and it has to do with meaning and atheism and existentialism, so on and so forth. We had this question come in a few weeks ago from somebody that I know, a student, a high school student. He's a very keen philosopher. At such a young age, he likes to read a lot of philosophy and he's been thinking about atheistic existentialism, nihilism, so on and so forth.
Let's just break that down for anybody who doesn't know what atheistic existentialism would mean.
Existentialism basically says, you may have heard this dictum in movies and things like that, you're defined by what you do. Now, if that doesn't seem odd to you, it's probably because you imbibed that growing up in different traditions in philosophy. Traditionally, it was seen as essence precedes existence. In other words, you know, what you are defines what you do, right? Yeah, or what you do comes out of what you are. That is also the Christian teaching, right? You are what you are, who you are, and out of that you do what you do. But it was the existentialists, starting with Soren Kierkegaard, that kind of really turned it on its head.
Now, it's important to note that this idea of existentialism really just means existence, to be, which started with Kierkegaard, who was a Christian. And this is why you need to make the distinction of atheistic existentialism. So what is it that inspires your existence? What is it that motivates or moves, you know, your existence, if you will? Now, somebody like Kierkegaard, then, it's going to be founded in God. Where somebody like Sartre, for example, he's going to say that existence precedes essence.
Right.
And so ultimately in that, getting back to what you're saying, Steve, ultimately you're making yourself into who you are then.
Right. And so some of the key figures that you want to learn about would be Albert Camus. He was more of a novelist, but he was a very influential person in—
I actually really appreciate Camus. I find that he's one of the more interesting ones to me, existentialists, as you could tell that he was really wrestling with this. I never got the feeling reading him that he had an agenda, more like he was just trying to figure this thing out.
Right. And then there's the one that Andy just mentioned, Jean-Paul Sartre. I guess we should also mention Friedrich Nietzsche. He was also an existentialist.
Yeah, and that's probably a good way to round this out then too, is because with Nietzsche, what you have is ultimately he's going to basically tear the whole thing apart and say, listen, there really is no such thing as meaning, purpose, or value. Mm-hmm. But you can rise above as a human being, become this Übermensch, a superhuman, by realizing that. And then once you realize that it's all meaningless and purposeless, then you can go and pursue your own pleasure. And in that way, you can live in the midst of this valueless world.
Yeah.
But all these guys that you're mentioning, I mean, it all started with questions, right? Like, who am I? That kind of stuff. But they just went a different way because their belief in no God at all, right? I mean, it kind of reminds me of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? And the meaning of life, the ultimate meaning and understanding of life was the number 42, right? That this computer generated out, took 7.5 million years to generate this answer to the meaning of life. Mm. But eventually the computer said, well, this answer is meaningless because there was no questions beforehand. So it's interesting that I think to start this whole conversation is to have good questions about where we're going.
Well, this gets into one of the interesting predicaments of it, and that is that as a human being, we're able to ask questions. And one of the questions that we're able to ask and that we do ask is, does this life have any meaning?
And when we talked about this before, we mentioned, you know, in order for life to have meaning, a couple things need to be in place, and that is an author, or we would say God, and immortality or eternal life. And so this student then asks the question. He starts off by saying, you know, some atheist philosophers do recognize that our life is absurd, has no purpose and things like that, but you just simply embrace it. You know, you make the most of what you have and you can find meaning, purpose, so on and so forth. Now, he says his social studies teacher actually takes this position. He says that it doesn't really matter if he disappears in the long run, as long as he enjoys, quote unquote, living in the moment. This may not compare to what Christianity really provides, which is eternal life in Christ Jesus, but how would you necessarily attempt to deal with that kind of argument that they'll just come and go, and it doesn't matter as long as they live each moment to the fullest?
There's so many things to be said about this that this show could be really long. Mm-hmm. So we're going to work hard to stay focused and give you some food for thought on this question. But one of the first things that needs to be appreciated is that there's a lot of assumptions that take place, and there's one of the things that we've learned over the years of talking on this subject is oftentimes people come at this question with different definitions of the word meaning, for example. What do you mean when you talk about whether or not this world has meaning? And one of the things, you know, fundamentally that you have to even realize is just there's an irony involved here. And I see this often when I teach at a university, and I'll have somebody, you know, who will tell me that everything is meaningless. Mm-hmm. But yet, they're using language that's endowed with meaning. And we couldn't even have the conversation, we couldn't even pose the question, unless we had a fundamental understanding that language has meaning. Mm-hmm. And I can give sound that I'm using my mouth to make, or symbols that I write down with my hands, that I can endow those things with mm-hmm. with meaning, and that we can agree on that meaning, and that we can have a meaningful conversation.
But that's the thing, right? You talked about, you know, agreement on the meanings and things like that, which goes to tell you that meaning is inherently subjective. And so the question then becomes, is it possible for any meaning to be objective?
Now, let's talk about that for a moment, because this gets into what I was saying earlier, that people tend to come at the topic of meaning with a different definition.
Right.
And specifically, there are two main ways of understanding meaning, and that is subjective and objective. Now, just simply put, subjective means that it's subject to you. It's person-dependent. And objective means it has an intended meaning that is not person-dependent, and it is objectively true for all people at all times. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I can create a painting, and that painting has whatever meaning that I ascribe it to. And that meaning is going to be dependent on me. Now, somebody else can come along and look at my painting and can tell me how it's meaningful to them. Mm-hmm. Well, now that's subject to them. And so that painting then has this subjectiveness in that I created it, but yet it also has an objective nature to it in that the reason why I created it is going to be the same for everyone. Mm-hmm. That's that objective meaning. Now, whatever subjective meaning that you find when you look at the painting, that's your personal subjective experience of the painting. But that is different than the reason that I created it in the first place.
But that's the curious thing, right? Right there, the same meaning, namely whatever the meaning that the author gave it or the creator gave it, is both subjective and objective at the same time.
Right?
Now, this is not to contradict the law of non-contradiction, because we're talking about this in two different senses of the word. It is subject to the author, but is objective to everybody else. And so there seems to be then there this kind of quality that only obtains between the creator and the object that is created by this creator. There is this special relationship that you don't have with anyone else.
When we talk with atheists, I mean, we say that there's no purpose without God, but they say they can find the purpose and meaning in life.
So let's jump into that. So I was talking about a painting. Now, what Terry is doing is he's just moving that lens onto a human being and asking similar questions that we just asked of a painting. Mm-hmm. Can we ask those questions about a human being?
Right.
And so the idea there being, does a person have an author, or is a person authorless? Now, notice then that an atheist in general would say, well, it's interesting the way they would answer that question, because in many ways they'd say, no, a person has an author, but it wouldn't be author, it would be authors, in the sense that evolution through chance variation over time created human beings, and so that would be its author, more right. or less. But the question would still be asked if that's the route somebody would go. The question then just needs to be asked, was there a purpose behind the creation of a human being
through evolution?
Yeah, through evolution. Right? And the answer to that, of course, would be, well, no. There was no purposeful intent mm-hmm. behind evolution. And so under that framework then, and this is where many existentialists that we've already mentioned come into the conversation, they acknowledge that, mm-hmm. that this is again that existence precedes essence here, and that now that you exist as a human being and you've come to understand that there is such a thing as meaning and purpose, and now you're asking that of yourself, but you're in this interesting predicament that no one has given it to you. And this is an important aspect of meaning to grapple with, and that is things do not have meaning in and of themselves. Things do not have purpose in and of themselves. Things are given meaning. Things are given purpose. This is a quality of purpose. This is a quality of meaning. It is endowed into something. This is person dependent. Mm-hmm. Persons create things with meaning. Persons create things with purpose. This is where we get into that idea that Steve talked about earlier, that in order for something to have meaning or purpose, it necessarily requires an author. Somebody needed to, you know, it's raising the question of why was it created? Mm-hmm.
So then the question is, well, who is the author? Terry, you were saying for many of these atheists, the author is not God because they don't believe in God. There is no God to begin with in their worldview. And so then we are the authors, right? We give it whatever meaning.
And interestingly enough, I think what people would say is that evolution, you know, time, chance, variations brought us to a point in which we now are conscious mm-hmm. and are able to kind of steer our own path now from here. And in that way, this is a very transhuman idea, understanding of in that way of living then, it raises the question, can I create my own meaning and purpose? Can I self-define what I am? By the way, that's an interesting tie that I think is important for people to understand, is that there is a difference between the parts that something is made of and the purposeful whole that something is made for. And this is an interesting distinction in that we naturally define a thing not by its parts. When we're speaking of a composite, we naturally define a created composite by its purpose. Mm-hmm. For what reason were these parts arranged into a whole? And that becomes its ontology. That becomes what it is. Mm-hmm.
Can I just read you something? It's from a professor at UBC. He says, when I was a student starting out in astronomy, the recipe of the universe was simple. Everything was made of particles that would make us, and our planet and our sun and all the suns and gas and dust in the interstellar space. We were part of the main ingredient of the dish. Now, however, the discovery of dark matter and dark energy has thrown it completely off. Today, the recipe of the universe is 75% dark energy, 25% dark matter, and 4% normal matter. The stuff we are made of, on top of this, the actual elements that make Earth and life on Earth represent only a tiny fraction of the percent and composition of the universe. We've gone from being the main ingredient in the recipe, the cheese and the fondue, to a pinch of spice, Matthew says. That's not a loss of stature in the cosmic kitchen, but a promotion. Think about this the next time you wonder whether life has any meaning. Every time you look up into the stars and wonder what they are and how they got there, you give the universe meaning and add to your own meaning.
You know what that is, Terry? That's what I like to call nonsense. Just read that last part one more time, because I
know gonna... this is what took me. It was like he says
that last sentence there. That's where the real nonsense hits.
Every time you look up into the stars, look at the stars, and wonder what they are and how they got there, you give the universe meaning.
Right there.
Yeah, and add to your own meaning.
Now, see, this is a really important distinction that we need to talk about, and that is, can you give something that you did not create its purpose? Can you give it its meaning? Can you give the reason why it exists?
Well, the simple answer is no, and that's the problem. Here's the problem, right? We have 7 billion human beings who could all look up at the stars, stuff that they didn't create, and there will be 7 billion different meanings that are being given to it. And the problem here is that then whatever meaning that I give to these stars will have no advantage over whatever meaning anyone else gives it to the stars.
By the way, can I just make a comment on that I think is interesting? Mm-hmm. This, by the way, is an interesting double standard where a lot of secularists really look their nose down at Christians in that I look up at the stars and the meaning that I ascribe to it, if I'm going to use that kind of terminology, which I naturally wouldn't, but let's just for the sake of the argument. Mm-hmm. And I say, God created it. It is one God in three persons, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, created it, and it leads me to worship. It's interesting, isn't it? That kind of meaning isn't an acceptable one, but or if it is acceptable, again, it's just for you. Mm-hmm. You can believe that, but that's just the meaning that you're giving it as a Christian.
Yeah. For the atheist, it is, say, you know, this universe is basically like this blank canvas. You know, I give it whatever meaning I want to give it. For me, this might be just this sense of awe that I feel when I look out into the universe and just how big the universe is and how little I am, and this kind of sense of awe and inspiration that I get out of it. The question that comes into my mind is, why is that any better a meaning than whatever meaning the Christian gave it?
Well, comes back to that subjective meaning part, right? The self-created meanings gets flipped in a sense that we're accused of thinking of Christianity and they think Christianity is a bunch of fairy tales, but they're creating their own fairy tales is what they're doing.
Absolutely. And in fact, there's a great article that recently came out in The Federalist called Atheists Find Meaning in Life by Inventing Fairy Tales. This came out March 29, 2018, which is a great article that really highlights this issue. Before we go any deeper, though, I just want to give a quick argument for why this is flawed. Mm. And a great argument that just demonstrates the flawed nature of being able to give things meaning at will, and at the same time will help you to see that distinction between subjective versus objective, is language. Language is really helpful in this. And we all understand that we don't approach language, and I mean, I could talk about calligraphy here, you know, as an artistic way of going back to the painting idea. So here's some calligraphy, you know, and I can look at it in the same way that I could look at a painting and admire it. But yet at the same time, as I look at the word L-O-V-E, mm-hmm. you know, I could analyze that and look at that by its parts. I could look at its brush strokes. I could look at the color and the angles in which it was painted. I could look at the molecular layers of whatever that canvas is that those words are written on. And at one sense, I understand that there's an aspect of it as parts, and that there's four parts to it. And, you know, I could break it apart into all sorts of ways. But yet at the same time, I understand that there is a composite nature to that collection of symbols, and that a meaning has been endowed upon it, and that that meaning is the same for everyone. And the only way for me to read the English language is to have the understanding that that language has an objective meaning that is the same for everyone and is not open to my interpretation. Mm-hmm. I can't just change, you know, the meaning of things at will. At the same time, though, somebody like J.R. Tolkien can create their own language. So you can create your own language, but it, so that's subjective. I've subjectively created it. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, if you want to be able to read that, you need to understand it objectively. And just to, there's an argument that I make in my book, Thinking, and that is that when we come to a dead language, and Egyptian hieroglyphics was a dead language for a very long time, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what you do. You can study that dead language scientifically till you're blue in the face. And there is no scientific method that's going to tell you what the meaning of those words are. And no matter how much subjective meaning you give to those symbols, you will never be able to read that language. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Again, because meaning is person dependent. It was a person or persons that gave it meaning. And if you want to understand what its meaning is, somehow you have to get back to that. You need to ask the author mm-hmm. what the meaning is. Now, we were able to do that through a black stone called the Rosetta Stone, but it seeks to highlight this idea that meaning is yeah. created by persons and it is subjective and objective.
And the scientific method is here is only useful insofar as you can access the person's intent through the scientific method, really. Mm-hmm. And so scientific method in and of itself is not going to get you anywhere, but it is the person's intent. That's where that enlightenment is going to come from regarding the meaning of those dead languages and hieroglyphics and things like that.
So let's go back now to the idea of the painting and get at this person's question. You can start to appreciate how complicated this topic mm-hmm. is, but the question that was asked originally mm-hmm. was, what sort of duration is required in order for something to have meaning? I mean, we come into this life and we exist for, if you're lucky, 100 years, you know, and then we're gone. So in that 100 years, can I, under an atheistic worldview, can I give my life meaning? And is that, would that lead to a meaningful life if I did that? Going back to this idea of a painting, imagine that I was to create a painting and I endowed it with meaning and everything else. And you come and you look at the painting and I explain to you, yeah, I've created this painting to honor how awesome, you know, Terry is. And I also to show just how tan he is. And I wanted people to know how important vitamin D is, you know, like that's the reason yes. I made it. But then I take that painting, Terry, and I go and I burn it in a fire.
That's not good.
A rather large fire. Until the painting's totally gone. And now we can ask the question, well, does that painting still have meaning? You know, somebody who maybe really wants to push that, they could go, well, the painting still has meaning to you. I guess you can still remember the painting. Mm-hmm. Okay. And some people for this would be leaving a legacy.
Right.
You know, when you die, you know, someday you're going to die and there'll be some people that will remember you for a while. But I can think about there being people that existed in the past that you and I have no idea of who created all sorts of wonderful paintings that are now gone. Do those paintings that they created and the things that they did with their lives, did it have any meaning now that they're gone? And I would say that there's two things that are taking place there. One is, what did we even mean by meaning in the first place? But we'll leave that question alone. The second one is, well, now that they're gone, did it have meaning? And I think that the answer would be, that, and this is an important one for people to understand because atheists misunderstand this quite regularly. And that is, yes, you can give your life whatever meaning that you want to give it subjectively. Mm-hmm. So I can subjectively give my life whatever meaning I want to, not as the author of the life, not as the author of the painting, but as somebody who's observing it, I can give it that sort of subjective meaning. And so maybe hiking is something that you find meaningful. Well, that could be the meaning that you give it.
On a slightly different note, this sort of attitude where, you know, like it doesn't matter if life ends in the grave, you got to live in the moment, live the life to the fullest. I find this
carpe diem.
Yeah, I find that idea incredibly condescending. And I'm not one to use this sort of language, just my political leanings being what it is, but it's like, wow, can we talk about privilege? Check your privilege. Because this is the sort of nonsense talk that only can come out of a situation where you're comfortable. They say that to somebody in Calcutta who has to be born premature, right, with cerebral palsy and things like that, and your likely destiny will be death in the gutters, forgotten by everyone.
Even on that one, Steve, what you got there then too is people who say, you know what, the meaning that I ascribe to all this is that the reason that you're in this situation is because of your bad karma and the stuff that you did in a previous life.
Right. And now if for whatever reason as a skeptic you kind of scoff at that idea, my question is, well, how are you able to scoff at this meaning that this person gave to this event? Like, why is your meaning any better over against this person's meaning, right? And now
that's the irony, though. And now we're kind of coming back to the whole Aristotle idea, where we do have people, though, that come in and say, well, you religious people, I mean, that's just a bunch of nonsense. What you really need to do is you need to be much more, you know, scientific about this, because that's a higher way of viewing things. And that thus the one who's more scientific about all of this actually has, you know, the higher position to really tell you what the meaning is or is not.
I keep on hearing from atheists that they can be moral people. This is moral expressions of, but it still comes back to personal taste.
Social conditioning. I think ultimately it does. Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I think I'm glad you bring that up.
There's not a leg to stand on there, right?
Well, I think there's a couple things to say, though, that this is where people get confused on this topic. And that is, are atheists moral people? Well, the answer to that is, of course they are. We all know many atheists that are lovely people and do wonderful things, and they can be philanthropists and everything else. But that's not the question that's being asked. I'm not asking, can you be a good person? I'm not asking, you know, can you do good things? I'm not asking, can you give your life meaning? I'm asking it in the objective sense. As a Christian, we're not asking it subjectively. On that, we are in agreement. I'm asking it objectively. I'm saying, does value even exist? Is there even such a thing as morality? Besides the plain pretend, does it actually even have any, is it actually real?
Yeah.
The same thing with meaning. Besides being able to give my life whatever meaning I want to give it, hiking or whatever that might be, does it actually have any real meaning, any objective meaning that's the same for all of humanity? In that it wasn't me that created it. It wasn't evolution that created it, you know, by blind chance, but it was actually the purposeful intent of a person. And in that sense, because purpose and meaning require persons, it requires intention, that it actually has an objective meaning. It has objective morality. And in that sense, I want to say on atheism, no. On atheism, there's no such thing as objective morality. There's no such thing as objective meaning and purpose on that worldview.
And the thing with, if you studied relativism at all, you understand that moral relativism, where you just come up with your own morality, whether as an individual or in group, ultimately boils down to might makes right, right? It's one group or one person against another group or another person exerting his or her own morality.
Well, that's how evolution brought us to this point.
Yeah.
It was might makes right that brought me to this point as a human being under the atheistic worldview of Darwinian naturalism. So then has that all of a sudden stopped?
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought up the morality aspect of it, Terry, because when I was talking to this student, one of the things that I suggested to the student was, well, here's another problem. When people say live life to the fullest and things like that, and when people find certain things meaningful, often it is because they think this is the right thing to do or this is the good thing to do. In other words, meaning is connected with morality, because morality is a function of meaning, and meaning is a function of purpose, so on and so forth, right?
So, for example, by the way, maybe your meaning is to kill people.
Right.
Right.
So that's the problem, right? So I told him, well, it's all well and good if your social studies teacher finds, for example, finds it meaningful to liberate girls that are being sex trafficked or something like that. The reason your social studies teacher finds this meaningful is because he believes that this is a good thing to do, right? This is the right thing to do. But what about the brothel owners for whom this, I mean, this makes them money and this is the good thing to do. And then, so there's the problem, right?
So what, on what foundation then can we challenge the meaning that he's ascribed to his life?
Right.
And now I have to take a higher position and I got to say, no, you're wrong. You can't do that. That's not your meaning.
And the moment the social studies teacher does that, he's somehow risen above everybody else. He's taken that privileged position.
Now we're getting back to this Nietzsche's idea of a Superman, right?
Right. And so I find that the most difficult problem for the atheist in this area is, well, if meaning is completely subjective, well, what makes your meaning better than somebody else's meaning? That, I just don't know how you can get around that.
Well, and oftentimes people will then respond to that, Steve, and say, well, whatever leads to the greatest good, that's what it is.
To which I say, well, you just kick the can down the road, right? Who determines whatever is the greatest good? Who gave that meaning?
Which, by the way, gets interesting as we say, well, a group of people that we call Canada, they've determined that this, these days actually, it's a group of judges that have have determined that this is the right thing. Just to kind of wrap this thing up, just so that we're really clear, just particularly on the end of this student's question here, and that is, as a Christian then, we would say that life has both subjective and objective meaning. Your life has objective meaning in that it was created by an author with purpose. The Christian understanding of that purpose, as expressed through Jesus, is that you were created for relationship with God and relationship with people, that you were created to live in community. Now, this is key because I kind of noticed this in the student's question, and I see that some people get this wrong, and that is that eternal life is not living forever. That's not the Christian understanding. Although that's an important aspect of having objective meaning, is that it doesn't just get burned up and lost in the fire, but that it has an eternal duration. But Jesus makes this clear in John 17 that eternal life is relationship. You see, it's doing what you were created for, and that is relationship with God and people that was intended to not end. That's what it means to actually live under the Christian worldview.
And that's the wonderful message about Easter, isn't it? We just celebrated the most important holiday in Christendom. Yeah. And the message of Easter is that, one, yes, God does exist, and two, that he has power over death, and he has conquered it through Jesus Christ, and three, and through this death and resurrection, we can actually be reconciled to God, right? Have this proper relationship with God for all eternity.
So let me put that in a different word then. That means then that through Jesus, we can live out the purpose or the meaning that we were created for perfectly, in that Jesus lived it out perfectly, and through his life, death, and resurrection made it possible that we could live that out perfectly. This is, by the way, is what Christianity gets at when it talks about sin or evil. It's not living out the purpose of humanity perfectly. This is what we call broken relationship, right? That's what we mean by morality, by the way. Me kicking a can isn't a moral issue unless there's another person involved. Morality deals with persons. And so the idea of Christianity is relational. It's being in relationship with the person of God and being in relationship with the persons of one another, in this idea of community and how those communities should live. Again, we're speaking of purpose.
Yeah.
If you want an introduction to this topic, my book, Thinking, Answering Life's Five Biggest Questions, the first chapter deals with that. Yeah. As well, we can put on the show notes some animated videos that we've created that would help you to understand this topic more.
For sure. Yeah. Shameless plug. I like it. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about. Ciao for now.